Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Welcome back to another episode of Talking Eds. I'm Sabrina and I'm excited to introduce you to our new topic of the day. If you remember from the last week's episode, we asked you to consider the application of technology in education. Today we have Yumi from China and Yuna from South Korea who are here to discuss how technology is shaping new models of education in formal and non-formal learning spaces.
Hello, this is Yumi from China.
Hi, this is Yuna from South Korea.
So in this episode, we will be exploring two very different online universities, Minerva University and the University of People from USA, before being joined by Professor Carmel Borg from University of Malta to discuss the role of technology in our local university lectures. However, not all learning happens in a classroom, and so we will also explore different platforms that anybody with the access of the internet can use to learn by self-direction. First off, let's listen to Ben Nelson, founder of the American University, Minerva, discussing a new approach to higher education.
So how do you create the very best educational experience, the best student experience, the best type of pedagogy and curriculum in the 21st century context without having the kinds of preconceived notions or burdens of an existing institution? Our goal is twofold. First and foremost, it is to create the world's leading university, to be the place of choice for the smartest, hardest working students all over the world. Our secondary goal is to actually have broader influence in the higher education sector, actually lead the rest of higher education to a new concept of curriculum.
Minerva, the online university we just heard about, is questioning the state of the world's current higher education institutions. Minerva is a university established in 2013 from the cooperation of professors in Ivy Leagues and IT investors from Silicon Valley. The founder, Ben Nelson, worked as a former CEO in Snapfish and fully experienced in Silicon Valley. He named Minerva from the goddess of wisdom because they want to teach the concepts of critical wisdom and actually take analytical tools and use them to make the world a better place. Each cohort is comprised of around 250 to 300 students. Tuition is half the cost of the elite U.S. universities, including residence fee and commission. Yes, what sets it apart from other online colleges or universities is that at the same time, all students live in a residence. All students are required to change their location of residency every year. Seven cities during 4 years of rigorous study. First year living in San Francisco, second year they can live in Argentina or Germany, cool. Third year India or South Korea, and the final year it is Israel or the UK.
I think the mobility in education is a huge advantage to help students to be globally minded for social change. It also improves students' ability to be flexible and adapt to a new environment. But I'm still pessimistic about the fact that this school has no physical campus, even if they live in residence halls. No sports fields, no campus museums, even no libraries. How can the learning process happen without a campus?
This is a good question, because cities have real libraries, real gyms, real parks, and real museums make sure that students integrate into life there as residents of their cities. When you look at the city as a campus, the world as a campus, students ask themselves how they can make this community a better place. Then they ensure that they transfer their practical ideas from one culture to the other culture of several others. We can also listen to the clip from Minerva about their learning platform so that we understand more on how they learn through these 100% online courses.
The Active Learning Forum is the unexpected learning forum. the place where you're constantly engaging with what you're learning.
As a Minerva student, I get to take classes from anywhere in the city.
All of Minerva's classes are taught in the seminar format with a maximum of 18 students.
Everyone agrees that higher education could be much better than it is today. Minerva's acting on that by putting together state-of-the-art technology and superb pedagogy. We have at our fingertips tools that are designed to engage the students 100% of the time.
So Minerva created an online platform which is called Active Learning. Yuna, could you please tell us a bit more details?
Pedagogically, Minerva ensures that there is a camera that is pointed at every student's face at all times. All of these classes are done online because they want to make sure that students have the data around what they say and the evaluation of what they say that feeds into a larger database and algorithm that enables the professor to know who to call and when. That algorithm that takes into account how a student is struggling with each piece of information and concept they try to teach, how many contexts they've actually applied those concepts in, all the way down to how much they've actually taught.
It sounds really practical to look at what progress students make by using technologies. I think this is a good way to show us how people can approach and use technology for education in a right way. The universities and education tools they develop play an important role in the world. Similar to Minerva, there is another online university that is using technology to restructure how we look at education, although perhaps in a different way. Launching what they have proclaim is an education revolution. The University of the People is a tuition-free online university with no compromises in quality. Although it may sound a bit idealistic to have professors from universities including Yale, Oxford, or Harvard joining forces to offer a degree program for free, that is exactly what the University of the People does.
Yes. In the academy world that is becoming increasingly driven by profits, this seems like a fresh model. They keep their costs so low or non-existent in a few ways. Firstly, courses at the University of People are taught by volunteer professors from other institutions who give their time to teach students. At the moment, the university is so small, offering bachelor's and associate's degrees in business, computer science, and health science, as well as an MBA program. But you're right in questioning a zero-cost degree. However, true to their belief of making education accessible to all, there are scholarships available for those who cannot afford the fee.
So, let's talk about the quality of education you're receiving from a free online course. The system at this university is designed to be sustainable and accessible, so there are no set times for courses, lectures to stream, or videos to watch. The founder of the university, Shai Rashif, described the course structure in a TED Talk as follows.
When our students being accepted, they are being placed in a small classroom of 20 to 30 students every week. When they go into the classroom, they find the lecture notes of the week, the reading assignment, the homework assignment, and the discussion question, which is the core of our studies. Every week, every student must contribute to the class discussion and also must comment on the contribution of others. This way, we open our students' mind, we develop a positive shift in attitude toward different cultures.
This peer-to-peer model of learning is one that has been increasingly coming to conversations in education and challenges in traditional student-teacher relationships in a classroom. But at the end of the day, when students have limited time with experts in their field, are compromises not being made in this type of education model? What would the implications be of a widespread application of this model of education?
Yeah, I think that is a very important question. As for how this model can be applied in larger contexts, Shai Rashif discussed that in his same TED Talk.
We have demonstrated that our model works. I invite universities, and even more important, developing countries' government, to replicate this model to ensure that the gates of higher education will open widely. A new era is coming, an era that will witness the disruption of the higher education model as we know it today, from being a privilege for the few to becoming a basic right, affordable and accessible for all.
So Shai Rishaf is preparing for an education revolution with his online university, the University of the People. However, for many students and academics, higher education still takes place on a physical campus. To talk about how technology is being integrated into our local university classrooms, we're joined by Carmen Borge, a professor in the Faculty of Education at the University of Malta. Professor Borge, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Can you tell us a bit about how you, as a university lecturer, integrate technology in your teaching?
First of all, I was listening to the Mireva, or rather the Minerva project and the People's University project. I think in a global context, we're talking about still a very marginal, experiment.
Yes.
We have to keep in mind that the globe, the world, is unequal. It's asymmetrical, so there are lots of professors who do not still to this very day have access to the latest in terms of technology, and that applies to educatees, to students too. So we cannot see technology in a vacuum. We have to see technology in a context which is cultural and also where there are particular pedagogical traditions. So with that prelude, I will go on to answer your question. So faced by technology, as you know, technology has altered, has shifted, has changed the relations between professor and students. Now, in terms of availability and accessibility of technology, the professor in that kind of context might react in different ways. So one typical reaction could be where the professor is asserting his or her authority in a classroom, typical classroom situation. In that kind of situation, where basically the professor is feeling challenged by the technology, he or she might react to that situation by asking students to shut down any technology available, in their bag or whatever. So that is one typical reaction. And where pedagogy is fundamentally traditional, transmissive, where the professor is the beginner and ender of, the whole situation within the classroom, that is a typical reaction. So that's one reaction, And I've obviously shied away from that situation because I believe that technology should be integrated. Then there is another reaction, possible reaction for the same situation, where the professor adopts a laissez-faire attitude towards technology. So the professor would walk in, transmit the information while students are busy chatting away, busy engaged with Facebook pages, busy checking the latest news, etc., etc. That is the laissez-faire attitude towards technology, pretending that nothing is happening, and the professor would move on with his lecture no matter what. That is also something which is happening where, technology is available inside the classroom. Then there is a third reaction, and I am moving towards that kind of situation where, rather than imposing authority on the students by, asking them to shut down the technology or ignoring, the situation where you have students, chatting away, you create a third space. And the third space is a situation where you integrate technology inside the classroom. So basically, we have this interaction of professor with students and with technology. So you plan pedagogically to integrate technology by planning several stops in the lecture where students can add information to what the lecturer is already, producing. Either also, they can also contradict, the information that the professor, is exchanging with the students, etc., etc. So this is a third space, we call it, where, technology is not shied away from, okay, but integrated inside, the classroom. That can be extended to outside the classroom by creating Google groups, Facebook pages, etc., where, you know, the discussion is extended outward into the virtual world after the classroom, because obviously our typical bachelor's, for example, classrooms are 1 hour long, where you cannot really develop, you know, an argument in that kind of restrictive situation. So you use technology to extend. So this is the repertoire, I would call it, of potential reactions to the presence and access or accessibility to technology inside the classroom.
Thank you very much today for being here to give us your insights on technology in higher education. Yeah, we really appreciate your perspective. Thank you. Welcome back to Talking Ed. Today we have been discussing the use of technology in education. We just finished exploring two models of higher education that operates almost exclusively through technology, how they are trying to change current educational model, and have spoken with Professor Kamel Bosch about technology in higher education in Malta today. Now we are going to move away from formal education and discuss technology in non-formal or informal learning spaces. A lot of listeners might have watched TED before. You might be accustomed to those red three letters. And Yuna, you have some experience working with TED. Could you please tell us a bit more about TED?
Okay. TED is an open learning space where learning happens more in a short of organic way. For those who are unfamiliar with those organizations, TED produces speech-style videos called TED Talks that feature a variety of people from local legends to celebrities. The topics range greatly and can theoretically be about anything from world crisis to personal well-being, or could highlight personal or local struggles.
I have heard of both TED and TEDx. Can you tell me maybe what is the difference between those two and what is the significance of that X?
Yes, I have actually organized TEDx events in my country, South Korea. Thank you. Since 2013. So TEDx events are like the big TED, International's mini-me. They follow the TED, ideas versus spreading ethos. But unlike the main conference, they are rarely for more than 100 attendees and are coordinated and tailor-made locally.
That sounds really fun. Can you describe one of your recent events?
Okay, last year there were two murder cases that happened in my city. Both victims were women who had experienced domestic violence and dating violence. The thing is, a similar case had happened in Seoul, but I didn't pay that much attention to it. I had just the heart of it, but I couldn't connect with how important it was. But when something similar happened in my area, I felt differently. I questioned why women seemed to easily become victims in these situations and where the society is vulnerable for women. I gathered up people again and we studied how society prepares a safe environment for women and how the feminist movement played a role together.
So what did you learn from TED as an adult educator? How can we use this online platform in non-formal education?
So TED Clips now exists as a data set, so big data. For our community and city, adult educators are able to suggest the significant issues by using them. So like this is the knowledge of the age. This is the thing you need to know. So, if you want to experience TED as an adult education, it would be best to be a host for a TEDx event. I think that's what we ought to strive for, someone who shows a way forward and someone who can lead others by example as adult educators.
Okay. Yeah, I think you made some excellent points, Yuna. Thank you very much. Well, TED videos online can serve as a form of informal education to interact with the information and, as you said, create learning communities. A TEDx event is a great option. At an event, you could have multiple speakers discussing the same topic and could generate a lot of discussion so people could learn from each other. Thank you, Yuna, for sharing your experience with us.
Thank you.
As we mentioned, TED Talks are available online for free access. However, they are far from the only online resources available. Technologies do not only help to promote education in formal ways, but also affects people's lives through non-formal and informal ways. Many people will turn to some instant learning skills nowadays. For example, it's becoming relatively convenient for people to start learning new skills by watching YouTube videos or listen to podcast programs. It can lead people to learn knowledge in specific fields which are completely new to them. Today, we have invited one of my colleagues to share her personal experience with us. Oban is here with us and is also a student in the IMS group here at the University of Malta. Hi, Oban.
Hello.
Would you like to share your personal experience of learning from YouTube or podcast with us?
Sure. I think I use those two platforms differently. When it comes to podcasts, I use those to keep up with social issues like racial equality, feminism, pop culture, and U.S. politics. So I don't really use them to learn a skill from start to finish, but I use them to keep me informed of the current issues and the conversations that are happening around those topics. And then when I think of YouTube, I think of more specific skills. Like, I always use a video that taught me how to put a duvet cover on easily, which is simple but really useful. And I don't know if I can really say I've learned it, because every time I try to do it, I still have to go back and watch the video again.
It is quite interesting that you mentioned that you would actually forget what you have learned from YouTube. But does it bother you to some degree? If people just forget what they have learned, then what is the point of learning?
I think actually describes the point of learning, in my opinion. I think particularly when we're talking adult education, we don't have to store all knowledge in our brains. We just have to give people the tools of where to find information. So I can try to do it myself, but if I'm not sure how to do it, I have the tools of knowing where to find the information.
Yeah, that's true. But of course, there are certain groups of people that are trying to learn certain skills from YouTube for practical use. So how do you think they can improve the outcomes? For example, if the producer of a video made you feel more confused about something, what would you do?
I think one of the nice things about YouTube is it's a starting point. So if I watched a video about a skill that I was confused by, then the first thing I would do is look into the comments and see if other people were confused. I think a lot of the times people share links there, or even reading the conversations about other viewers can clarify things. And then if I didn't find the answer there, jump onto Google, because the internet's huge.
Oh, that's also probably a lot of people would do. But considering the massive information existing on those platforms, including the self-produced program and many related comments, how do you make sure that you're being critical with all those information when it comes to some more important issues?
That's a good question. So a lot of the podcasts I listen to are around really serious issues, but I appreciate that I listen to those with people who I know are experts in their field. For example, when I listen to U.S. politics, I listen to a series that's organized by former speech writers from the White House, and they always bring on and introduce the expert guests that they're talking to. And then I think you also just have to take everything you listen to with a grain of salt. These are people's opinions, and the more diverse opinions you listen to, the more you can make up your own mind.
I guess one main benefit of such technologies is that they just serve as a tool or a platform for people to share knowledge rather than giving specific knowledge in certain fields. So when people receive different information, they can also learn how to criticize them. Thank you very much for sharing with us, Oban.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you, Oban, for sharing with us. With mobile phones becoming a necessity in everyday life, learning can be accessed in more convenient ways. Now, people can watch YouTube videos on their phones instead of a computer, which largely reduces the limits on equipment and location.
Yeah, speaking of using phones, mobile technology have changed enormously in the last decade. People used to use mobile phones mainly to make voice calls, but this function is of second importance now. There are so many more things that people can do with their smartphones. For example, they can check their emails and log into social media platforms, and there are lots of educational applications that can be downloaded on their phones to support daily non-formal learning. Take my personal experience as an example. I have an application named Duolingo on my phone. This app was recommended to me by one of my classmates when I started learning German language. is extremely helpful in learning vocabulary and pronunciation of a new language. It makes the beginning process more interesting with pictures and games. I would always practice German through this app when I was commuting on buses every day. It indeed made me use my time more efficiently.
Wow, cool. Yeah, such technological developments indeed offer opportunities for learning at any time. And it's probably also making learning resources more accessible to people. But have you ever thought about the very different levels of access to and competence in using such technologies? So people can use their mobile phones in very different levels of complexity, which means some people use only basic functions while others use multimedia applications as well.
Yes, sure. You're absolutely correct. There are different levels of complexity in this technology. The best way to promote a new technology is to involve more people in using it, and there is no problem in starting from the easy part. Actually, in a seminar a few days ago, my colleagues and I touched on the topic of how senior citizens are excluded when it comes to technology. Some people just automatically assume technology is beyond their ability, which is not true in reality. Since technology is so widely used in people's daily lives, elderly people should also be a part of it through informal learning. For example, in my country, China, nowadays more and more people would use their phones to make a payment through certain applications, such as Alipay or WeChat payment. It's super convenient and easy since all you need to do is to scan a QR code on your phone screen. Most people just automatically learned how to use it by watching and imitating other people.
So it is not that complex, and even elderly people can also use it?
Yes, sure. They want to make their lives easier, and this is how technology becomes widespread and promotes informal learning. People don't learn for the sake of learning, but to make those skills practical in their lives. And they download apps to make a payment, to get directions, or to learn a new language. And at the same time, they acquire digital skills without even being aware of it.
Thank you, Yumi and Yuna, for the discussion today on technology's role in adult education. And a special thanks to Professor Carmel Borg and IMASC student Auburn Skellen for coming and sharing their unique perspective with us. With this, we are saying goodbye for the day, and grazie Hafner for listening to us.